Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Bridge the Atlantic. We are your host, music web designer Ross Barber, owner of Electric Kiwi, where we create awesome custom websites for bands, artists, and musicians.
And I'm award-winning singer-songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, and indie filmmaker Marissa Novelli.
This week, we're thrilled to welcome Melora Hardin to the show. Melora is an award-winning actor and musician whose acting credits include films such as 17 Again, 27 Dresses, and You, which she also directed and produced, and starring roles in TV shows including NBC's The Office, Monk, Transparent, and Outlaw.
In 2008, Melora made her Broadway debut, starring as Roxy Hart in the revival of Chicago, and also performed in Les Mis at the Hollywood Bowl. With over 70 film and TV credits to her name, we're excited to learn more about Melora's experience in the entertainment industry, the advice she'd offer to aspiring actors, and what's coming next. Hi, Melora.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
I am well, thank you. Very, very well. We'd like to start this off just by simply jumping right in and asking you three things about yourself that everyone should know.
Three things about myself. I think that I am highly curious about human nature, that I am kind, and that I am always in search of the next opportunity to be creative.
I like that. I like that. And I think point two about being kind definitely comes across in your Twitter and Instagram feeds. I've been following you for a while anyway.
Stalking.
Yeah, that's the professional term. I've been following you as a fan for a while, but I've been following you as a researcher today, and I think that definitely comes across
in
your social media. So that's a very good thing.
Yeah, I just do it every now and then, and so I'm glad that it's somehow representing something about me.
So we're really interested to know if you can tell us a little bit about how you got started in the industry and what your earliest memory is of working in the business.
Well, I come from a family of actors, and so I started acting professionally when I was 6 years old. I tugged on my parents' sleeve. I went with my father to drop off some new headshots with his commercial agent. They were like, "Oh, you're so cute. Don't you want to do this?" And I thought, what? And I just bugged my dad and my mom, please, 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 please. And they said that finally they just decided, okay, we'll let her go on 10 auditions. If she doesn't get anything, we'll ease her out of it. She'll never know the difference. But I got the first thing I went on. And and I loved it. And it was a commercial for a toothpaste that no longer exists called Peak Toothpaste. And I got to dance. I'm a dancer. I started dancing when I was 5. And I started writing songs. My mom says I wrote my first song when I was 2. And so I got to dance in front of a mirror with a doll. And, you know, in an old-fashioned dress. And I was really into old-fashioned clothes and stuff back then, all through high school. Anyway, so I was, you know, got to do that, and I just remember loving it and thinking, "Oh, this is just dreamy." So I guess that was how it all began.
So is there a reason your parents kind of, I don't want to say discourage you, but we're kind of trying to keep you away from it? Is it just because it's kind of an ugly business? What, is there any reason?
Well, I mean, they're actors, and you know, so I think that, you know, I think in general they were mostly worried about me dealing with the rejection of, you know, going in, putting yourself on the line, you know, saying, this is who I am, this is what I've got to offer you, and them saying, you're not what we want. You know, I have two daughters, and they both are actresses, and it's a very interesting thing. I mean, I think that if your parents are living through you, I think a lot of times you'll see child actors where the parents are really kind of trying to fulfill their own dreams in whatever their kid is doing. And I think that's very dangerous, and I think can be just explosive later in life. But my parents weren't doing that, and they really, I was really fortunate because they really gave me skill sets to handle all that stuff. And you know, my father took care of all my money. I didn't ever even really understand about money or know about money or care about money. And he took very good care of it for me, so that when I did turn 18, I had something to go into the world with, but I also had, you know, it was always about really about creativity. It was always about your craft. You know, they both being wonderful, talented actors themselves. And my mother has been a very famous sort of young acting teacher for young people, sort of like Leonardo DiCaprio and Jessica Biel.
Wow.
A manager too, and all the Phoenix kids, Joaquin Phoenix, River Phoenix, and on and on and on. And so I was kind of her first experiment, and she is just one of those, you know, one of the log lines she has on her website is explore the joys of acting. And that really is true, and she really did teach me that, you know, and they both really taught me the importance of being a professional, what being professional was, you know, understanding and really being inside what the craft of acting is. So it really wasn't about fame. It wasn't about money. It was about the craft. So I'm really fortunate, because I think a lot of kids or a lot of young people that start are kind of thinking, they're just stars in their eyes, and they're just thinking like, I want to be famous. I want to be famous, especially in 2015. I really see that's a culture of, it's wow, you know, and we have lots of people that are famous for nothing, you know, right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Ross and I have mentioned this on the show before. It used to be about, you know, you ask a group of kids what they want to be, and, you know, it would be an actor, a musician, an astronaut. Now it's, what do you want to be? Famous.
I know. And and famous is like an empty word. Like, it doesn't mean anything.
No.
Usually you would get famous for something really special you'd done, or being, you know, being really good at something you do. It's a very odd one. Yeah. It's really odd.
Yeah, I couldn't agree anymore on that one. It's a little disheartening.
Absolutely. Yeah, a little bit.
So on to our next question. I'm just going to say straight out, Steve Carell, that is all. Steve Carell.
Okay, that's the question.
Well, this leads me to a little story about The Office, and more specifically, Jan. Mm-hmm.
Such a fantastic character, by the way.
Oh yeah, I mean, and you completely brought her to life. I can't imagine anyone else playing Jan, and me feeling as equally terrified and enamored by by Jan.
Yeah, that's very true.
And so the story I have is whenever I speak to someone that's not watched The American Office, I always tell them about the dinner party episode.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think the dinner party episode is so awkward and brilliant, and I absolutely love it. So if I know someone that's not seen that episode, I'll say, right, you're coming up, I'm going to cook you dinner, we're going to watch this episode. And everyone that's watched that episode is just like, I can't look, but I love it. And then they end up watching the whole series season in a number of weeks.
Oh yeah, wow. I think it's one of the best episodes. Yeah. I'm going to go out and say one of the best in the history of television. I'm serious. It is such a phenomenal episode. The awkwardness, the hilarity that ensues just from the awkwardness, which is so real, and these kind of situations actually do happen.
I know.
So I guess what we want to ask you is, you know, what was it like working on such an iconic, hugely successful television show? And do you miss it?
I don't miss it. It was wonderful. Jan was such a wonderful character. Working with Steve was great. We had an amazing professional chemistry in terms of, you know, there's different rules of acting, right? And one of them is giving gifts, especially when you do improv. And I think that he and I really did do that a lot for each other. There was lots of surprising sort of gifts that you would give back and forth energetically, and just sort of connected sort of little gems that would be passed back and forth a lot. And so I think that created the chemistry that Jen and Michael had. And, you know, when you say like being on an iconic show, it's very interesting. I mean, I think because I've been doing this so long, I think I was probably the last one in the cast to really believe that it was what it was, and what it took me to believe it was a physical manifestation of my very, very sore bicep muscle after we won our first SAG award for best ensemble, and I carried that statue around all night, which is literally a bronze on a marble thing, and so carrying this around all night, and I had the most incredibly sore bicep muscle. This was after we'd already won an Emmy, but when you win an Emmy for best comedy, the producers take that home, and so I didn't carry that around all night, and I actually, an Emmy is not quite as heavy as a SAG award, but I, you know, I kind of woke up the next morning and I was like, oh, I guess we're a hit, you know? And I guess maybe that was probably just my built up defense mechanism that I had garnered over the years of being in this business and being raised around actors. And, but yeah, I mean, in terms of like missing it, no, I don't miss it because it, you know, because I guess I'm here where I am now, you know, and I'm moving on and I'm in the moment. And so I'm very grateful for it. It was a great time. It was a wonderful learning experience. It was a wonderful creative experience. It was, it's exciting, that it was such a big hit and that it still is, you know, reaching people and touching people, and that I have generations of fans, you know, that are discovering it all the time, and that's really, yeah, that's wonderful. It's exciting. I feel like very lucky that I happened to end up on that, and now I'm on another one that seems to be making real moves in the world. That seems to be really sort of breaking ground, which I think The Office really broke ground. I don't think it could have ever occurred before reality television was kind of a big deal, because it had that documentary mockumentary feel to it. And I think that it made people feel like, oh, there's something kind of real, but not real about this. Like us looking in the camera and doing all those things. In the same way, I don't think Transparent could be living at any other time than right now. And I think that's extraordinary. And I think that, just I'm very grateful to be on two things that are kind of, that have kind of broken ground.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Transparent. Huge fan. I love the show. Totally love it. You play Tammy in Transparent. Yeah. And it's like you mentioned, it's breaking new ground and it's really helping to further the LGBTQ+ conversation. You know, and I'd say both shows are iconic, or one show is iconic, the other show I think is on its way to becoming iconic and breaking a lot of ground. You know what? Yes. It is. And I would call that a very important show, actually.
Yes.
You know, it's I think it's the first of its kind, really.
I agree. No, it is. It's really, really important. And Jill Soloway, the creator of it, you know, her father actually did become transgender late in his life. Mm-hmm. And that's what inspired the show. But she really, you know, she was going around pitching to networks, and they were all saying, oh, we just want like a lighthearted family comedy, you know, workplace, something.
<Okay. laughs>
And she was like, no, I really want to change the world. Yeah. And it was Amazon that came along that was like, what is it you want to do? You know? And I think that says a lot, you know, that says a lot. And she really is determined to make a real mark. And I think it's profound that she won the Emmy for best directing because she's a female and she talks a lot about directing from her vagina.
Love it.
And I think what she means by that is just creating a very kind of nurturing, you know, womb-like kind of creative environment, which is embracing and maternal kind of all the people that are there. And I just find that it's an extraordinary work environment in that regard. And she was really like, she was sort of, first for, everyone thought, expected her to win for best writing. And she won instead for best directing. And I think that she might have been slightly confused about that. But in my mind, as an actor that works with her as a director, I just think it's perfect because she's very female in the way that she directs. Very And very just, yeah, it's just, it's an amazing environment, in a very male driven, you know, society, like creative society of the business of Hollywood.
Oh, you know, absolutely. It's very film male-driven. And music industry.
Yeah, right. Right. Music too. So, so it's been really, really wonderful. And she's constantly sort of saying, thank you to everyone. And it's very inclusive, very inclusive. It's the most inclusive environment I've ever worked in, ever.
Yeah, yeah, like I said, this, it's groundbreaking, and you guys are just going into your second season now, but I think really is going to be remembered for something special, I think.
Yeah, yeah, I do too.
My humble opinion.
Yeah, no, yeah. Thank you. And then the second season's pretty awesome. We just finished filming it, and it's going to be, woo, it's going
to
be amazing.
Ah, my wife and I are excited to watch. So you're no stranger to performing in front of the camera and off the camera. I kind of like to know, how does it compare?
Well, right now I'm doing a play right now at the Mark Taper Forum for 2 more weeks called Appropriate. It's a new play, and it's you know, incredible, wonderful themes of a very dysfunctional family and themes of race and a very important play that I think is bringing up lots of important conversations, sparks important conversations, by a new playwright called Brandon Jacobs Jenkins, who's hot, he was called by our, you know, big LA Times critic here, Charles McNulty, what did he say? He said a rising star of the American theater.
Oh, wow.
And he really is. And he was just over for dinner last night, and he is, an extraordinary guy. And you know, we were talking actually a little bit about this, about how in theater, it's a living, breathing animal every night, 8 times a week. And you get to actually fulfill the arc regardless of whatever happens every night and every matinee. You know, you get to, so if people forget things or you trip or things fall or props aren't there or whatever, little things may happen. You still are dealing in the moment, in real time, with those surprises, and you're still fulfilling that character's arc and dramatic circle at, you know. So in that regard, it's very, I think, obviously it's called the actor's medium for a reason, because it's just very fulfilling. It's very juicy. You know, I've been doing it now for about 4 weeks, and, you know, and then we had 4 weeks of rehearsal before that, and I'm finding things new every night, and that's really exciting. I would say that similarly, that is something that I think I very much try to do on camera. You know, that I'm always, and one of the things that works really, jives really well with me, with the way that Jill Soloway works, is that, you know, barring, you know, showing up and hitting my mark and being in the light that they need, and, you know, and saying the lines that need to be said, you know, Jill is very, we kind of, and that kind of began with The Office too, I would say. Like the writers were on set all the time, and so sometimes it would be, they would say, you know, I'm not loving the way this is, you know, working, not because of anything you guys are doing, why don't you improvise a little bit, you know, hit this beat and somehow tell this, a little part of this story, but do whatever you want. And sometimes that stuff would end up on camera. That would end up in the scene. And then they'd come back with like a rewrite, and we'd do that too. And Jill does a similar thing where she kind of, you know, so the reason I bring that up is because, you know, with Brandon, like he was rewriting the whole time, and he has never published the play. It's been done other places, but he's now publishing it because he completely reworked the play. And he said to me at the beginning when they offered me the part, he was like, how do you feel about, you know, rewrites? Some actors just lose their shit when you hand them rewrites. And I was like, you know, not only am I okay with rewrites, but I, you know, unless you're just willy-nilly doing them for nothing, which I could tell he wasn't that kind of person, because he's very thoughtful, very intelligent. So he's rewriting to make the play the best it can be. And he literally handed me my end monologue, which was about 2 pages long, the day before opening night. So I got to do it one time in a preview before opening night. And, you know, we had a whole long talk about it. And he's like, I don't know how you feel. And I was like, look, I think it's better. And so I'm going to do it. you know, and they were like, well, do you want to do it now? You want to do it tomorrow night? I'm like, I'm going to do it tonight. Like, I can do it tonight. And Jill Soloway is similar in the sense that she kind of, we did it. Like, she really wrote me an Emmy episode for season two. Because I said to her, because, you know, I'm a special guest star on the show. And they had to put me in the best supporting actress category. And we really tried for that with The Office, which I was always a special guest star on The Office. I was never, you know, a regular, even though sometimes I did all the episodes.
Right, right.
And so the Emmys has this new rule where if you do half or more, you have to be in the best supporting actress category. You can't be in the best guest star category. And so this year I said to Jill, you know, we got to write something for Tammy that, you know, gets them noticed, because like the dinner party episode, we tried to get them to nominate me for that, because everybody says that you're not alone. And it is such a fun episode, but it was in the best supporting actress category. So I don't know what happened, but in any case, we didn't get the nomination. So Jill Soloway, she's like, okay, I'm writing you an Emmy episode. So she wrote me in season two, 102. So the second episode of the season, she was like, I'm writing that. And then she was going to put me in, and that episode is like, it's kind of explosive. And, we did the scene, and then she kind of said, you know, yeah, just, I don't know, like this needs to get said and that needs to get said, but everything else, like you do whatever you want, you know? which was really fun. And for someone who improvises and is good at improvising and working with such wonderful actors who are giving so much back and you're, you know, are so present with you. It's really great. It's really great fun.
Awesome.
Wow, that was a long-winded answer.
It was a thorough answer.
I think I answered like five things in that
Yeah,
answer.
That's it. We're done. We don't have to ask
I know, we're
else.
Just deleting questions here. No, yeah. Don't need to ask that.
Are you ready for 20 questions?
Okay, sure.
Coffee or tea?
Tea.
Meat or veggies?
Meat.
TV or Netflix?
Netflix.
Twitter or Facebook?
Twitter.
Yoga or yogurt?
Yoga.
Nice.
Friends or Seinfeld?
Because it's 1995 for some reason.
Oh, Friends or Seinfeld. Oh, I thought you meant real Friends. I'll take real Friends over any TV show. Friends or Seinfeld? Well, Friends. Yeah, Friends. I was on Friends.
Yeah, you were in next to Friends.
No, but I actually...
I did not know that.
Yeah, but David Schwimmer and I have known each other since we were 17. And,
Wow.
So, I would take Friends over Seinfeld.
Houston?
Although I think that's a great show, too.
Houston or San Francisco?
Well, Houston, because I was born there.
There we go.
Although, you know, as an adult, definitely San Francisco.
I love San Francisco. But I've never been to Houston, so I can't really compare.
Yeah, I mean, it's a nice city, too. And, you know, I have some attachment to it because I was born there, but not really. I have much more of an attachment to San Francisco, being that it's 2 hours away. By plane.
So Judy Garland or Barbara Streisand?
Oh, that's really hard for me.
You're getting harder from here on.
And that's not fair, really. Okay, well, I know I'm not supposed to go into big, long answers around this 20 questions, but I'll just tell you quickly that I just did a one-woman movie, that you heard me right. That
what?
And the character is sort of kind of a Judy Garland-esque character.
Oh, wow.
So, they were both my idols when I was a little girl. God.
I'm going to say Judy Garland.
You're going to say Judy Garland?
I'm going to say Judy Garland.
You're just going to say it for me?
I'm just going to say it for you. Doesn't mean you still don't love Barbara Streisand.
I like that Barbara Streisand is alive, and I like how much she has pushed the envelope for women, and Judy Garland's much more tragic character. So I would say Barbara Streisand. I guess.
Comedy or drama?
Both.
That's okay. You can say
yeah,
that.
Yeah, we'll let you have that. Canada or Scotland?
I guess Canada. I don't know. They're both so beautiful.
Hey, if Canada gets it because she guesses Canada, I'll take it. We'll take it.
You need all the wins you can get.
And my husband's English, so really I should be saying
something. Oh, there we go. Okay, this one's another mean one, but Michael Scott or Dwight Schrute?
Oh. well, is it Jan answering?
Oh, that's a good question.
I didn't think of that.
If it's Jan answering, it's definitely Michael Scott, for sure.
Of course, yeah.
And if it's Melora?
And if it's Melora, it might be Dwight.
Oh, controversial.
Next up, we've got education or experience.
Wow. These are good questions, you guys.
Thank you.
I mean, they're both so good. But I mean, because experience is education, and and education is experience. So, I think education's important. I really do. Let's say education.
Have you, as an actor, have you learned more through education or through experience that you apply to your day-to-day work?
That's a really hard one, because I started being educated as an actor
so young,
you know, from the time I was 6, and living with actors, like learning all that at all times. So I don't even know. I mean, certainly as an adult, I would definitely say experience. I would definitely say everything about the way I react and respond and within my craft and outside of my craft, because the business is its own thing. Right? The business is different than the craft, and you have to be able to maneuver and work through the business part of it just as seamlessly as you have to be able to work through the craft part of it. So in that regard, I would say that would come from experience. Just the ability to do that with grace and integrity, you know, that's from experience. But also my base was very, you know, it was absolutely because of education.
You can say both. We'll allow both.
So I guess I'd have to say both.
That's two votes. You get one more vote. You get 3 votes. That's it.
I get 3 votes. Okay. Did I get 3 votes already?
No, it's 2 so far. It's two.
Okay,
you have one more. Save it.
How many questions have we done?
More than half. We got a few
both.
More.
One more. Okay. One more vote. Okay.
So, Family Guy or American Dad?
Neither.
Neither. Okay, you're allowed in neither too.
Because I sang on Family Guy, so I'll say Family. Because I did a little like cameo singing thing in Family Guy, and everybody seems to think that's like the greatest show ever. So we'll say Family Guy.
This is another really mean one. I'm sorry. Theater or film?
Yeah, that's ridiculous. that one. That's definitely.
She's just like skip.
Ask both. Yeah.
Now, Michael Jackson or Michael Bolton? And yes, it's a serious question.
Michael Jackson.
Not both?
just so you know, we might be getting Michael Bolton on this show.
Really?
I hope he doesn't watch the last 60-plus interviews we've done, because every time we ask it, we all laugh, and Ross is usually like, it's serious!
And everybody says Michael Jackson?
Almost everyone.
Almost.
Been like 3
almost.
Michael Boltons.
Okay, but can I just say, he has a freaking amazing instrument. He has a voice.
Of course
he has a voice, right?
Like, and he has a good sense of humor about himself,
unbelievable.
Too.
Unbelievable. And he and Kenny, what's his name, being best friends?
Kenny Rogers, is it?
No, the
saxophone guy, Kenny G.
Kenny G, that's it.
Kenny G and him being best friends.
That's amazing.
I don't think they're gay. I don't think either one of them is gay, but if they were, they'd be a perfect couple. Like, they are the most perfect best friends. You know how like couples match?
Oh, yeah.
They're like as best friends, they match. You know, the hair, one's dark, one's blonde. They're both kind of handsome in a weird way. Like, they're not traditionally handsome. They're kind of like, sort of
ruggedly.
Sexy, but in like a weird way, like sexy, but not. It's like they kind of are, and women love them, but they're awesome, those two.
The Voice or American Idol?
I don't know, because I don't watch either.
Neither
but my best friend just told me that The Voice was really awesome because they were kind. So I'll pick The Voice.
Ricky Gervais or Ricky Martin?
She likes that one.
Definitely Ricky Gervais.
Well, there would be no Office without Ricky Gervais, Ross. So come on, man.
Exactly. I know.
He's crazy. Talk about pushing the envelope.
No,
he has
kidding.
The best laugh
that,
ever.
Oh, the best.
I love his laugh. I could listen to it all day.
It does. Yeah. He has an amazing.
Absolutely. Whale or kale?
Because like people eat whale, so are you saying like food?
No, I'm a vegan, so I don't support that. I do support eating of kale and whale watching. Not okay. Really kale watching though. Yeah. Kind of boring.
Kale watching would not be fun. So a whale meaning like, do you like whales better than you like kale?
Sure.
So you eat kale, but you watch whales. Yeah, right. Definitely whales okay. For sure.
Yeah, we didn't really think about this question when we created it but we've asked it to everyone, and it seems like we'd be breaking a tradition if we removed it. So I think it's constantly going to be there.
Seems the most confusing. We like confusing our guests.
And people do get confused, right?
Always. Okay. You're not the only one.
Okay. All right, good. As long as, because you can't, it's hard to compare a food stuff. Exactly. Are you saying you want to eat the food? But eat the whale.
Melora, see, we ask the tough questions here on British Atlantic.
We ask the questions that people want to know the answers to.
We ask the questions that no one else in their right mind would ask, really.
Yeah.
So I've got another rhyming one, because we like rhyming.
Yes.
Bette Midler or the Riddler?
Bette Midler.
And finally, I'm sorry for this one. It's a terrible question. Again, it would be a tradition. It would be a sad thing for us to stop it. But Ross or Marcio?
That's not nice, is it?
We're not very nice people.
That's really not nice.
We're not nice. You hate speaking for yourself, Ross.
We both have cute hats on.
We do, don't we? Ross is the cuter one.
Miles.
Wait, she still has a both.
The last both.
You still have a bat. No, she used a both. Okay, we'll let her use another both.
We'll give you a bonus both.
Yeah, definitely both. I can't.
A bonus pick. Both. What is
it? I don't know. We just make this up as we go along.
It's kind of true. It's kind of true. Melora, before we wrap this up, I'd like to know if you could go back in time and tell yourself one piece of advice that you've learned in your career. What would it be?
To be patient. And patience does not mean sit around and be a couch potato, but it means, in other words, and patience is an all-encompassing word in the sense that you need life experience in order to bring that to your work and your creative expression. And you can't get life experience by not living life and not being where you are, the age you are, doing the things you're doing. So being patient with where you are and how your life is unfolding while staying focused. And then and being patient with your instrument. You know, being patient with your instrument so that you, you know, like I think as a younger actress, I would put a lot of pressure on myself to be able to manifest an emotion, let's say, in a scene, and I wasn't feeling it, and I thought that I had to manifest it right then, that second. And what I've learned and matured into is, no, actually, we are living, breathing, moving animals, and so you have to actually stack the deck to build into that emotional state, and then you have to be patient with yourself in order to let it come to life, come forth. And so, I would say patience is a big one. It's a be softer with yourself, be softer, be, you know, in the same way you're being kind to others, you know, be kind to yourself. And I think that a lot of artists can be really, really tough on themselves and be really dissatisfied and really disappointed and spend a lot of time being negative and wanting to rush ahead. And I would just say, be where you are, be patient with yourself, be patient with your instrument, learn as you go, be open-hearted, open-minded, and kind to yourself.
I love that. That is such genuine advice. I can just tell. You know, and speaking of being patient with your instrument, I mean, we didn't really talk much about this, but you are a phenomenally beautiful singer.
Oh, thank you.
Which is, you know, I've been listening, Ross and I have both been listening to your work, and it's great. And I love that what you're doing. I just love it.
It's really nice. I appreciate that.
Yes, absolutely. I think everyone needs to listen to that. And speaking of music, And what are you listening to nowadays? What sort of music, TV, or film recommendations do you have? Maybe one of each. Maybe one of each.
I don't really watch TV at all. I will recommend Transparent.
Oh, absolutely.
It's a wonderful show.
So I've recommended that on this show several times, Ross.
And a few of our guests have recommended it. I know that Tyler Hilton recommended it. Jesse Cannon recommended it. It's definitely popular amongst our guests, for sure.
Oh, yes, perfect. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it's doing good things in the world. It's opening people's minds with laughter and with heart. So I am very much behind it as a person, as an artist. But I do want people to see the one woman movie that I just did, and I am plugging some things that I'm doing now. I know,
please
but
do.
But that's kind of what my world is right now, so I can't really talk about anything else. It's called Golden Vanity.
Golden Vanity.
And it's these young filmmakers. This is their first feature, and they're really awesome, and I think they're talented. And it's never been done before, as far as we know. There's been one-man movies, but never a one-woman movie. And it's set in 1967, and she's kind of faded a big time movie star, a la Judy Garland or Gloria Swanson or Elizabeth Taylor, in that vein, and it's very funny and very tragic, and so I think, and I sing in it. I sing in the movie, and the song is an original song that I did not write, but a beautiful song that is arranged amazingly, beautifully well, and a really beautiful song. So that's great too. And as far as music goes, I have, Pandora on my thing. Paula Cole's one of my best friends. I did set a Paula Cole station on my Pandora and was listening to it in the car the other day. And I think that, I think there was, on her station, there was some amazing, people. I love Patty Griffin. I love
her.
Paula. She's amazing. I love this girl who sings Jar of Hearts. What is her name?
Christina Perry.
She's great. I love Coldplay. I think they're amazing. I love Maroon 5. And then I love classic stuff, Sinatra and Judy Garland, and I'll listen to that stuff. I love Louis Prima and Keeley Smith. I think Pink Martini are amazing. I love Adele. I'm very eclectic in my tastes. I listen to
Bach.
That's
the way to be. I think true artists don't limit themselves, really.
And I just finished recording five new songs of my own. I've been working on a one-woman show, and it's a musical. And so I'm kind of trying to figure out what the next step is. And I don't know. Maybe I'll try to get into some kind of a workshop thing where I can kind of develop it. And so I've been listening a lot to my own music. I could send you one.
You know what? Yeah, you're not the only one. When I'm working on new material, I listen a lot to my own stuff. Because you have to.
And then you don't listen to it. Like when you're done with it, right? You don't listen to it for years. Yeah. And then you go back and you listen to it and you go, that's pretty good. oh, wow, that's what I was doing then.
Yeah, that wasn't as bad as I thought. It's just like looking at old pictures. It's like looking at old pictures, right? I didn't look as bad as I thought I did. It's always like that.
That's what I always remind people. I'm always like people, going like, God, I'm getting old. And I'm like, yeah, well, just wait in 10 years. You're going to look back and go, God, I look really good then.
Exactly.
So I would just chill out on the I'm getting old thing. Not getting as old as you're going to be.
Exactly. So everyone can go check you out at melora.com. How you scored that, amazing. You're on Twitter and Instagram. That's just your name, Melora Hardin. Which is perfect. And hopefully it will.
Instagram is Melora D. Hardin.
But I want everyone to go follow you on Twitter and Instagram and follow just everything you're doing, because you are awesome. You're doing some really, really great things.
Thank you.
Absolutely. It's true. And I'm currently writing my next solo album, and I've just released my side project, Midnight Soundtrack's debut album, Foreplay. You can hear my music on marcianavella.com. Make sure to follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Spotify, which are all / Marcianavella.
I'm working on websites for various artists at the moment. You can check out my work and my blog posts at electrickiwi.co.uk. You'll find me on Twitter and Instagram as Electric Kiwi, and on Facebook, Electric Kiwi Design.
And this episode was brought to you by Chris Keaton Presents. Find out more about what Chris does and how he can help you at chriskeaton.com.
And if you'd like to sponsor the show, visit patreon.com/bridgetheatlantic.
Melora, this has been so great. Such an honor to have you on, truthfully. I really mean that.
It's very nice. Well, it's been fun. I've enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Bridge the Atlantic. If you like what you heard, please subscribe and leave a rating and review on iTunes.
You can also find us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. So connect with us on there and let us know what you think of the show.
Thanks for being awesome, and we'll see you next week.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.